Yes. Today is March 4th, and let the record reflect that it is 1:05, and this is the beginning of House Judiciary. And with us today is Representative Klayman, Representative Lynn, Representative Foster, and Vice Chair Keller. And myself, Representative Ledoux, the committee chair. Representative Millett is excused. To begin with, please silence your electronic devices or you're going to be buying everybody donuts. We have three items before us today. First, a hearing for Governor Walker's appointee to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, William McCord. Then one previously heard bill, HB 83, and we'll finish with one new bill, HB 65. First up, we'll be hearing the qualifications of Mr. McCord and recommending that his name be referred to a joint committee for consideration. And I'd like to remind the committee members that our job here is only to review the history and qualifications of Mr. McCord. There will be no vote for or against his confirmation in the committee today. Committee members should feel free to ask any questions that they want, but we are not voting on his qualifications, only reviewing them. Do we have Mr. McCord either online or in the audience? Online. Okay, Mr. McCord, please put your name on the record and give us a brief history of your professional qualifications.
My name is William McCord, and I'm a resident of Haines, Alaska. Only very recently, I've only been in Haines about since May of this year. So, just very briefly, I'm assuming that everybody has the summary of my past, and what I would like to do is open it up to questions, and that way we can be more responsive to the members of the committee.
Okay. Is there anything, though, Mr. McCord, that you would like to highlight about your qualifications, just making sure that we're focusing in on those?
Two things. One is that I have, as you can tell by my resume, quite a varied background, a great amount of depth in dealing with broad ranges of experience, and therefore I think it helps me relate to people and to processes quite readily due to my experience. And the second and probably the most important thing is partly due to my formal training that I have pretty good skills in being an objective observer and analyzer, and how to make sure that fairness is injected in any process.
Thank you. I see Representative Keller, you've got a question?
Yeah. Thanks for William for being willing to step forward and take on the responsibilities. I just wanted to ask, what on your conflict of interest in your application, you said that you answered yes to the question that if you or your family would be affected financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission. I just wondered if you'd explain that.
If there was a conflict of interest?
In the on the information that I have in front of me, there's a block section of it that says conflict of interest. And there were three questions there, and one of them is, could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions to be made by the commission for which you are applying? And I think it is marked yes, and I just was wanting to explain.
Well, on the particular phrase that you referred to, I have a no there. So maybe we got a different printout. Is that possible?
It's possible. That's what mine definitely says yes, but that's I'm glad we asked. I mean, that answers the question.
Representative.
Okay. Thank you to the chair. Mr. McCord, I had the same question. Do you happen to have your application handy in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you see where it says conflict of interest?
Yes.
OK, Okay, if you look at the last two questions, could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission for which you're applying? Answer, yes. Next line. Please explain the potential financial benefit. Answer, no.
Wow. That's very different. I have a copy of the printout in front of me, and I have two questions. One is, certain boards and commissions require full disclosure of personal financial data under AS 39-1510. If required for the board or commission for which you're applying, are you willing to do so? And I answered yes. And then the second one is, could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission for which you are applying? And I have no. And I copied it directly before I sent it.
Okay, well, I guess I don't understand this, because the one that everybody is looking at here, and I think I speak for my other three colleagues who haven't commented, under that question, could you or any of member of your family be affected financially, etc., it looks like on my copy you answered yes, and then the next question is, please explain the potential financial benefit, and on your copy, and on my copy that says no, and all of us were just kind of wondering about that. Representative Klayman.
So, to try to simplify things, Mr. McCord.
Yes.
Without worrying about what's on the page, is there anything about serving on the Alaska Public Offices Commission that will cause any financial hardships or difficulties or anything else impact you or your family in any way, other than the time you'll spend going to meetings?
The answer is no, there will be no hardship.
Okay. And what about financial consequences from serving? Will there be any financial consequences to your family or yourself from serving on the APOC?
I do not anticipate any.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. this question that was just posed by Representative Klayman and the language on the form seems to focus on financial benefits, but because of the unique board you're seeking appointment to, which is a board that might confer other benefits that are not financial but political or otherwise in nature, do you foresee any potential benefit of a non-financial matter, political or otherwise, sir?
Well, first of all, I'm so new to Alaska, it would be difficult for me to envision anything like that. And then, second of all, most libertarians don't have an advantage of anything. But, quite seriously, I don't anticipate any particular advantage. As much as I'm not participating in any campaigns, setting up any kind of efforts to reap the benefits of something like this. It is quite it's a five-year commitment, and I take that quite seriously. As you can tell from my background, I've done quite a bit of community service.
So
go ahead.
This may be on your form, but I'm missing it if it is. How long have you lived in Alaska?
Since May of this year.
May of this year?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Lynn.
That was going to be one of my questions. could you...
And I'm a year-round resident, by the way. That question has come up before.
You have a lot of time in Heidelberg, Germany, a beautiful place. I've been there. How did you happen to be in Germany? Was it military or what?
Yeah, I was a military dependent.
Oh, you're dependent. Okay, fine.
Yes.
Could you tell me, APOC is a very, very important agency. both for the public and for candidates. Could you kind of just outline what you might be doing on the APOC board? What would be your principal job at APOC? I can help you a little bit. When all of us here run for office, we have to file APOC reports. Could you explain what some of those reports might contain and how something might be come before you to look at and investigate?
Number one, I'm very new, but I have looked through the statutes and the regulations, and my understanding is that the staff does the research on whatever issues might come up regarding financial
I understand. When I vote on something, my staff does a lot of research, but then I have to look at it myself and interpret what the staff says or may recommend it, and then I have to cast a vote on whatever it is we're looking at. And so what typically would come before the APOC board for you to review? What would be some of the things that might come before you to investigate?
Well, as I understand it, there are two main things, and one is a complaint that might be filed about the conduct or the appearance of misconduct.
Right, and what type of complaints might someone in the public file?
Failure to report would be one example, or failure to meet the deadline for reporting would be another example. A misreporting, and which would, of course, again be researched by the staff and documented, the dates and the times and the amounts that might be involved in terms of penalties.
Okay, thank you. I may have another question later.
So let me ask you a question, Mr. Bacord. As a member of the Libertarian Party, do you believe that the functions of APOC are an appropriate governmental function?
Great question. In fact, that's probably the most common question put to a libertarian. I kind of use this, an analogy, and that is when you're swimming in a stream, you swim with the best and most fluid way to swim. And so jumping to your question, there are certain things that we have to deal with, like two-way street. Yes, I drive on the right side of the street, and just like everybody else. So this is an agency that is a necessary part of our living together and working together in a political environment. So yes, I accept it. As a libertarian, and in spite of some of the philosophies that you've probably heard.
So for example, under our APOC rules made by the legislature, which APOC enforces, people are only allowed to donate a certain amount of money to candidates. $500 is the maximum that can be donated per candidate, and if somebody has donated more, that's an APOC violation. What's your reaction to that? Is that something appropriate for the government to have legislated? And even if you don't think that it's appropriate, can you enforce it?
Well, as a member of the commission, that would not be my decision to make. That's for the legislature to make. My job on APOC would be to decide with the other members as a collective body whether or not, first of all, there was an actual violation, and second of all, is the penalty fair under the rules? And it's not to judge whether or not, you know, the rule is acceptable. That's for the state legislature.
Any further questions? And, well, if we don't have any further questions...
Let me just ask one if I may.
Go right ahead.
What is your motivation for applying for this important position on APOC? Why are you doing this?
Well, I have a long history of public service, and this unexpected opportunity showed up, and for a libertarian only to be on the board, and my contacts told me that I should submit my name, and so I did. This would be a good way for me to be immediately involved in what's happening in Alaska.
Of course.
Follow up?
Yes, please. When you render a decision, of course, that's supposed to be a nonpartisan decision. It doesn't matter what the party, the person against whom a complaint has been filed, it matters what they may have done or not done, and you have to keep partisanship out of it.
Yeah, precisely.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg, did you have a question?
Yeah.
And incidentally, I have neglected to note for the record that Representative Lynn and Representative Grunberg joined us some time ago.
I was here before you gambled in.
Mr. McCord, through the chair. did you initially apply for APOC or just for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission?
The same application for both.
May I ask what impelled you to apply for APOC?
Coming from the state of Washington, we have a similar, almost identical history in terms of public disclosure. And it's something that's worked quite well in the state of Washington. I thought, based on my experience, I would be able to do a pretty good job on APOC, as much as I was somewhat familiar with the disclosure requirements in the state of Washington. And they seem to be almost directly parallel to what's happened in Alaska since the 1970s.
Through the chair.
It looks from your application that the community service you had in Washington did not relate to anything like APOC. The University District Community Council, and REI Cooperative Board, and Snow Isle National Foods Cooperative. Did you have any experience in anything political or anything like APOC?
As an appointee, no. But the consideration of issues, definitely yes. For example, I think what you're asking me is, was I ever involved in something that would require enforcement? And the answer to that, am I restating that correctly?
Please continue.
Okay. The answer is, no, I have not been directly involved in an enforcement type of role.
May I continue, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Have you ever run for office or been involved in a campaign or had any dealings with the equivalent agency in Washington or elsewhere?
Yes. I've run for office in the state of Washington.
May I ask the details, please?
Can you, Representative Grunberg, please go
through the chair. I'm sorry. My apologies to all these chairs. I commit this in daily.
Yes, I've gone through the petitioning process in order to run for office, and the filing fee process and the public announcement of conventions and the reporting of campaign contributions. Yes, I have.
Through the chair, may I ask the offices you've run for?
I ran as initially going way back for Congress, and subsequently for state legislature, and those are the two main things right there.
Through the chair. Have you had any dealings with the equivalent agency in Washington, ever, for example, had a charge brought against you or been involved as a witness or as anybody who has lodged a complaint? Have you had any dealings with the equivalent agency in Washington?
No, I have not.
May I continue, please? You said you arrived in Alaska in May of 2014. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
And how long after that did you submit your application to be on this board?
Let's see. Submission, I have 12/29/2014.
I'm sorry, if that was an answer, it escaped me. Would you?
I submitted my application electronically on 12/29/2014.
So about 7 months later.
Yeah, that's close enough, yes.
Did anybody ask you to submit your application for this board?
It was suggested by existing Libertarian Party members. As it became clear from the election how things were going to stack up in terms of openings on APOC. In other words, the two parties with the most votes would be eligible.
Thank you. Nothing further at the moment.
Thank you. Does anybody else, Representative Klayman?
Thank you, Mr. McCord. A couple of follow-ups. I see on your resume that you were appointed to two Washington State commissions by then-Governor Dan Evans in 1970. What were those two commissions?
One was on the commission that selected and interviewed the first candidates for the Department of Ecology. And then the other one was what was called the Special Levy Study Commission, which dealt with trying to figure out ways to finance the public school system.
And follow up through the chair. In either of those commissions, were you at the time a member of the Libertarian Party?
At the time, there was. Officially, there was no such thing as the Libertarian Party. It was initially started, let's see, in 1971, and it wasn't even on the ballot until 72.
And now, so I follow up, I assume then you became a member of the Libertarian Party after it became an official party in Washington?
Yes.
And then I think the only other question I have, well, actually may have two follow-up. The first, you served on the board of REI. That's the REI Cooperative is the same one that we have in Anchorage. It's a big, sells loads of outdoor gear to many people in our neighborhoods. Is it the same one or something different? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'm glad you recognized it.
Same place. Did your libertarian views interfere with your ability to function effectively on that board?
How do you mean interfere?
Madam Chair, I kind of object.
If you mean...
I think that's... if I could, in point of order.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't think that's an appropriate question, and I think that if the person identified as another party, I think it'd be the same response for me. It just doesn't seem like that having a party perspective on the APOC is a bad thing, or we wouldn't have this slot there. And so it's just it, I just object.
I was actually representative. I think that was your objection. Well, is well considered. I was to some extent follow up on the questions that our chair had asked with regard to whether the libertarian views that suggest that government has no role, whether that would interfere with his ability to essentially he's appointed, whether he agrees or disagrees with that perspective. He libertarian view would at some extent suggest he shouldn't be participating at all, but
Madam
he's certainly
point well taken.
So actually I'll ask a different question rather than about the RIA board. I saw that you were worked for a period, I think, as a fisheries observer here in Alaska.
Right, yes.
And were you able, that job following up through the chair requires you to basically assess whether somebody's following the law in your role as a fisheries observer. Were you able to perform your duties consistent with what the law required in that role?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I served, you know, under the National Marine Fisheries Service, and yeah, technically an observer on a foreign fishing vessel was by treaty arrangement, and under the treaty arrangement, the observer is like a junior officer and would report on a weekly basis the catch and would be also given like different codes in order to send back in case there was some aberration in the catches. And then the Coast Guard and National Marine Fisheries Service might arrange some kind of boarding and inspection if necessary.
Anybody have any further questions? Representative Lynn.
I'm a newcomer to Alaska myself, and I moved up here from another state. What brought you to Alaska? Why did you move from Washington State up to Alaska?
Because I thought it would be great to be here for personal reasons. And
thank you.
Just personal reasons. I have no investment here or anything. But I've always been in the Pacific Northwest, and I haven't lived this far north. And I thought this would be...
Thank you.
A beautiful place to be.
All right. If there are no further questions, is there anybody online or in the audience who would like to testify? All right. Public testimony is now closed. Thank you, Mr. McCord. Can I have a motion to move Mr. McCord's name for consideration to the joint session of the House and Senate for confirmation? There being no objection, Mr. McCord's name.
Wait.
Madam Chair, I would move that we move William McCord, his name forward to the full body for consideration, and with the understanding that a vote to move his name forward is not a vote for or against, does not indicate how we'll vote on the floor for the APOC position that he's applied for. Thank you.
I'm going to object for discussion.
Representative Grunberg, this is not a vote on whether we think he's qualified or whether we don't think he's qualified. There's really no grounds for discussion here. Everybody has their own view of things, and
that was kind of going to be my question. I didn't know what the whether there was allowable an objection, and if so, what the allowable grounds would be. Because I was going to say I've never been in a situation where anybody has objected before.
Let's not make this the first time.
I'll, I'll withdraw my non-objection.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
And I would like to say to Mr. McCord, nothing personal.
So could I have a brief at ease so that we could all sign? Back in again. Next up on the agenda is HB 83. For this bill hearing, I will pass the bill, pass the gavel over to Vice Chair Keller, since this is a bill that I have introduced.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have before us CS for HB 83, and we adopted it as a working document, and I believe where we're at right now is Representative Grunberg has an objection on the bill that we'll start there to see where we're at. We have closed public testimony, and we will only reopen public testimony if there's somebody requests to testify. We do have, for the information of the committee, Suzanne DiPietro from the Judicial Council online to answer questions if we like. But I will let the sponsor make an overview statement of where we're at, and then we'll see if Representative Grunberg maintains his objection.
May I just have a parliamentary inquiry, please?
Oh, I'm sorry?
Parliamentary inquiry, please.
Parliamentary inquiry. We'll take a little at ease.
No. With me on the record.
Chair just goofed up. Representative Grunberg does not have an objection, and the version H is what we have before us, and that is the version that is before us without objection. And so again, we'll turn to the sponsor if you would just kind of give us an overview of where we're at, and hopefully we'll get to committee action here on the bill.
Sure.
I am going to defer to my aide, Clark Bickford, for that.
Identify yourself for the record and give us a briefing.
Okay, for the record, my name is Clark Bickford, staff to Representative Ledoux. Just a brief overview, since we've spoken on this before. House Bill 83 would repeal a 1997 law that requires civil litigation reports to the Judicial Council. As I stated before, it's widely ignored, ineffective, and not supported by the legal community. I know there were some questions last hearing about the funds that were given to the council, what would happen to those funds for making the reports, and Suzanne DiPietro is online today to address that question. So if nothing further, I would let her answer that question herself.
So I understand that you're asking that public testimony be opened back up? And that's what their request.
Right. She okay. She is available to answer that question for you. So.
Okay. So we'll open public testimony back up. And Suzanne, if you would, address the question that was before us. I was trying to avoid restating the question because it came from me. Anyway, if you have a statement, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to let the committee know that my research indicates that there was an amount of money put in the Judicial Council's base budget back when this law was passed in 1997 or 98 to do the work, to give us the resources to do the work. And I wanted to let the committee know that I would stand ready to release that money or turn it back if the law is repealed and the Judicial Council is no longer required to do the work.
Thank you, Suzanne. I appreciate that, and I just want to say that's a little bit out of the purview on the bill. I'm sure that information will go forward to the Finance Committee. Representative
I've just got a question. So the money was put into the Judicial Council's base back in 1997 or 1998, and you've done one report, has it been, or has it been more than that?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, actually we've done three reports.
Three reports, but it's certainly not been a yearly report or anything. How much money do you have left since you haven't been doing the reports?
Well, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, although we haven't been doing reports, and just to remind the committee, the reason for that is because in recent years there hasn't, the data has been so spotty that it has not made sense to do a report.
This isn't blaming you for not doing the reports.
Yes.
I'm just sort of curious, if you haven't been doing the reports and there's the money for doing the reports, how much money is left?
So through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, we are still, though, doing the work in the sense that we are still collecting the data. So we are entering the information into our database. We receive a couple of forms from attorneys who've settled cases probably a day. So we're entering the data into the database. We're making sure that the data is, you know, correct, maintaining the database. So we actually have daily activities that we do in order to fulfill the requirements of this statute that don't involve report writing.
And how much money was put into the base?
Through the chair, you know, my records are a little bit spotty, but as far as I can determine, it looks like it was $19,200.
A year.
Correct.
And so putting the data, the sporadic data that you've been getting, which seems like it's relatively minimal, into this database is costing almost $20,000 a year?
Through the chair, I wouldn't call it erratic. It's regular, and it also involves following up. So when information comes in that's incomplete or seems inaccurate, it involves follow-up phone calls and emails and letters to attorneys. So, yes, I would that is correct. We are using that money to do the work.
All right. Thank you, Ms. DiPietro.
I think that may be a little bit out of the purview of what we do here on the yes or no vote on the moving the bill forward. So do we have any motion from the committee?
You want a motion?
Yeah.
I'll move it.
Okay. Go ahead.
I move CS for House Bill 83, Judiciary, Work Order 29, LS 0414/H, Wallace 2515. From committee with individual recommendations.
And attached, it may become a positive fiscal note, but right now I believe it's zero. So is there any objection?
That's part of the motion.
Okay. So with that, the bill moves. And we'll take a little of ease here while I give the gavel back and we sign the paperwork.
And now for the last item of the day. Presenting House Bill 65 is the bill sponsor, Representative Hawker. Representative Hawker, would you like to come up here and put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation?
And thank you, Madam Chair. And with the indulgence of the committee, I would like to ask my aide, Julie Lucky, to join me. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is a pleasure to be before you today. I'm Representative Mike Hawker, District 28 in Anchorage. House Bill 65 was one of those bills, started out as a simple little bill, and it's picked up a little bit of weight along the way. Originally, the bill was intended to change the date that public official financial disclosures, or we call POFDs, are required to be filed. We all know these are the annual financial filings where we have to take all of our personal, all public officials, whether state, in the legislature, or in local government, or in boards and commissions, have to file this full disclosure of their previous year's financial transactions. That's everything they own, every bit of money they made, all the investments they've had, and everything else. Note, the bill has no question, takes no issues with any of the substance of those filings. The issue is that those reports have been due on March 15th. Currently, under statute, they're due March 15th. Our original bill wanted to move that date back so that it would be after the date of an individual's federal income tax filing requirement, which allowed individuals with complex financial situations to get all of their information back from their lawyers and accountants and whoever puts it all together for them, so they could file an accurate and comprehensive report on the same time frame as they are required by federal statute to have their income tax returns completed without an extension. In the House State Affairs Committee, the committee agreed with the idea behind the bill, but said that the April 30th date, which is 15 days after the federal filing requirements, was a little bit quick, and asked, and the State Affairs Committee moved the date back to May 15th. So the crux of the bill, the core of the bill, as the sponsor brought it forward, would change the annual filing dates for legislative financial disclosures and public official financial disclosure statements to May 15th each year from March 15th. There were a couple of changes made in the State Affairs Committee that added to the bill, one with which the sponsor is completely familiar and very supportive of, is that this is the issue where you have professionals such as attorneys or doctors or accountants or engineers or architects or nurses, for that matter, independent nurses, who have a multitude of clients, individually relatively small dollars, but a large number of clients. Current statute requires that all those clients and their financial, the revenues from each of those clients be disclosed. Attorneys claim client attorney privilege and refuse to disclose it. Accountants don't enjoy a client attorney privilege, but there has been a practice where if the firm for which the individual works says, no, we're not going to allow you to disclose our client base and what they're paying us, APOC has allowed them through regulatory activity to not disclose those. The language added in the bill makes it very clear statutorily that a public official financial disclosure filer could be exempted from disclosing information if that information is either confidential by law or would adversely affect the person's ability to conduct business, and sets up a standard to weigh the, and the bill then sets up the standard to weigh the potential harm to the person, comparing it to the public's interest in obtaining that information. I think it's a really, really good provision. There are two other provisions in the bill that were brought forward by APOC itself, and we accommodated in this bill, and they are regarding various reporting requirements as relates to individuals residing in different communities of different size. The sponsor has no opinion on the APOC request, but was certainly very, you know, happy to accommodate the request of APOC when they brought it forward.
Do we have any questions for the sponsor of the bill or for Ms. Lucky? Representative Klayman.
I'm just curious about the APOC recommended the increase in population from 5,000 to 15,000. It sounds like you're neutral about that.
Why? Yes, sir, I am. I have no opinion on that subject.
Okay. But you're happy to have it included in the bill, so you could have said, no, I don't want the amendment, but you're happy to put it in.
Excuse me. Through the chair, Representative Klayman, again, in the interest of accommodating the concerns of the Alaska Public Offices Commission, we did not object to including their request in this bill. Again, knowing that it would continue to go through the legislative process and our various committees would have the opportunity to discuss it with APOC.
And then one other follow-up through the chair, the waiver of disclosing clients is one that lawyers, doctors, nurses would actually need to make a special request to have that requirement waived. It wouldn't automatically apply.
For the record, my name is Julie Lucky. I am staff to Representative Mike Hawker, District 28. Through the chair to Representative Klayman, there is currently a waiver process where the person does put forth a letter to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, and then they are granted basically a waiver from disclosure. It is my understanding, and I believe that there's somebody from APOC online, but it is my understanding that then how their reporting reads is that it will say, instead of name and address of client, it will say protected by HIPAA or protected by attorney-client privilege or some notation that that information is not being disclosed. But I believe they still either report an aggregate dollar amount from all of their clients or they individually list the clients with the amount but just with the name not there. But I would encourage you to ask if there is somebody from APOC online more specific questions.
If there's somebody that could answer that question, I'd appreciate
it. Okay, go ahead. Mr. Dofinius, can you answer that question? And please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm the Executive Director of the Public Offices Commission, and yes, I am online. If you could repeat the last question, ma'am.
Through the chair, the public, for lawyers and doctors and others that have confidentiality rules in their profession that would basically make it a problem for them to disclose the names of clients. Is that a process that, what's the process now, and does this bill change that process?
Through the chair, the way I understand the bill is this puts the process into statute rather than just in regulation. It would not change our process very much at all, if at all. There was one other comment earlier about some individuals who are granted a waiver or an exemption from reporting all their clients. What was said was absolutely true. Some report the aggregate of their earnings and not the clients. Others report the clients in an abbreviated manner, either client one, client two, and omit identifying information and just put the income from the clients in that way.
Follow-up, is there a formal request that the lawyers and doctors need to make where they actually write APOC and say, can I have the waiver, or do they just make the claim on their form and that's that?
Through the chair, in general, the individuals who are asking for the exemption write us a letter, explain their situation, and we go from there.
Thank you.
Any further questions for either the bill sponsor or Mr. Dofinius? All right. Well, I would now like to open public testimony. And we have Mr. Dofinius online, but that appears to be just to answer questions. And I see that we've got one person in the audience who's signed up to testify, and that is Kathy Wasserman. Kathy, do you want to come up here and introduce yourself and put your name and your affiliation on the record?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. First of all, I'd like to start out with thanking the sponsor and his staff for helping me through this. I noticed the CS came out, and as Representative Clayman said, it changed the population figures to now require municipalities between the population count of 5,000 and 15,000 to now file electronically. We had not heard from APOC that that was coming. No one had ever called any of the clerks that were involved. It actually, I don't have the list of municipalities that have opted out, but without that list, it affects 12 different communities. To include Northwest Arctic Borough, North Slope, Kodiak Island Borough, Ketchikan Gateway Borough, the City of Wasilla, the City of Ketchikan, the City of Kodiak, the City and Borough of Sitka, the City of Bethel, the City of Homer, the City of Kenai, and the City of Palmer. While it might not be a huge stretch to require electronic filing in the larger communities, when you get out to places like Bethel, it becomes a lot more difficult. Many of those clerks do have people that come in and file by paper. And as I was told when I spoke to someone from APOC, this was requested by the clerks in order to allow them more time because it required their time. Under Alaska Statute 3950.020B, city clerks are still the keepers of that paperwork. It says that the municipal officers and candidates for elective municipal office shall file with the municipal clerk or other municipal official designated to receive their filing for office. So this does not save the clerk's time. They still must get a paper copy and have that on file in their office. So I would hope that from now on when APOC wants to change some rules that they would talk to the clerks or to the municipalities. But until that, we're opposed to that section of the bill. I apologize to the sponsor. I did not mean to twist his bill all up, but when this was added, I am simply against that portion. And after talking with all the clerks involved, we would like that portion removed from the bill. Otherwise, we have no problem with the bill.
So does anybody have any questions for Ms. Wasserman?
I have, and I appreciate the staff having this drafted, I have an amendment sponsor blank, and I would at some point like to know the bill sponsor's wish. But if it's agreeable, I'll certainly be happy to offer.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for Ms. Wasserman right now?
I have a question.
Okay.
Just to make sure I'm tracking, you're here testifying today as the representative of the Alaska Municipal League. This is not just your personal capacity, but you're actually here for AML.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that this AML's official position is that the amendment that's been offered is one that you would oppose accepting the amendment, but in all other respects, you're fine with the bill.
I have no problem with the bill at all, and I have spoken to all the clerks that, in theory, had requested this, and they had not. So,
all right.
We're totally happy with the bill. This bill was not even on my radar screen until this popped up.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Same thought. I just want to clarify: if we do not put the amendment in, that is there as an option, you are very happy with the bill. Am I right?
Thank you. Yes, sir. Yes.
Thank you.
If we do put it in.
If they do put it in.
Well.
I've said if we do not. If we do not put this in, are you happy with the bill?
I am not happy with the bill that states that communities between 5,000 and 15,000 should be included.
Thank you. I'm glad you clarified because I heard something different. Thanks.
Okay.
So I think I have a question for Mr. DeFinius at this point. Mr. DeFinius, where did you get the idea of changing the numbers on the municipalities to this 15,000 level?
Madam Chair, over the last couple of years, both myself and members of the staff have given a number of trainings and other presentations. And we were approached several times by clerks asking us to find a way to have their filers file electronically. If they've since changed their mind, APOC staff has done that portion removed from the bill, and I apologize to the sponsor. My assumption was that it was still a valid concern. Clearly, it's not. The sponsor was very gracious in including it, and I apologize for troubling him.
So you didn't check with the clerks recently, I take it?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Representative Klayman?
From the standpoint of APOC, does this 5,000 versus 15,000 number have any impact in terms of the cost of your doing business in the APOC, or is it cost neutral for APOC?
Through the chair to Representative Klayman, it wouldn't change the way we do business at all, and it's completely cost neutral.
Thank you.
So I've got another question for Mr. DeFinius. As the law now stands, if somebody is who is not required to file electronically wishes to file electronically, are they precluded from filing electronically?
Madam Chair, no, they are not. Anyone may file electronically.
Well, if that's the case, Mr. DeFinius, I guess I'm having a little bit of problem understanding why then the clerks would have approached you to have changed the numbers if they were already allowed to file electronically if they wanted to. But that's probably neither here nor there.
Oh, it's not.
Representative Grunberg.
I appreciate the question. It's not. It's an important question. He needs to answer it.
Madam Chair, if you'd like an answer, I'd be happy.
Go right ahead.
What the clerks had told me was this was quite bothersome for them in that they had to maintain a stack of forms. They had to give them out to the filers when they came into the office, then later collect them, then later get them to us, APOC, in some manner, and it just created work for them. If filers file electronically, they're already filed with us, with APOC, they either print a copy out, bring it to the clerk, or the clerk can print a copy out. And Ms. Wasserman is absolutely correct when she said the municipal clerk is the custodian of the record.
No, but where I was getting confused, and I still am confused, is if they were able to file electronically without changing the rules, then they really didn't have to keep all of these. I don't see why it would have been burdensome to them. I'm just confused there. So, anyway, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kathy, I heard you say talk about the challenges, for example, out in Bethel in terms of folks who may not have internet. And I may have missed it. I don't know if you explained in the Northwest Arctic borough how you've got Kotzebue there, but the borough is comprised of more than just Kotzebue. You've got places like Deering and so forth. And when you get out to those small villages, there's a real challenge in terms of having access to electronic filing inside.
Representative Foster, through the chair, you are totally correct, and I didn't mean to zero in on just Bethel. The list that I received at first said that five communities were involved, and I went and checked all my records, and it involved 12. And Bethel was kind of the last one I wrote down and was just thinking about the fact that it would be difficult in Bethel, but you bet it will be much more difficult in the Northwest Arctic Borough or in the North Slope Borough.
Thank you.
Any further questions for either Mr. DeFinius or Kathy? Is there a motion? Is anybody like to make a motion to amend the bill?
Madam Chair, I'll go ahead and move amendment number one, which is labeled N.1.
Are you moving the amendment? I'll object.
For purposes of discussion?
Sure. I mean, I'm not sure I want to. Yeah, for discussion.
You have no choice. Not you.
Right.
I would. I mean, after listening to the testimony, I don't think we should amend the bill and reduce the number, change the number from 5,000 to 15,000. I think we've heard from the clerks that would be affected, and they're quite content with 5,000. And this actually looks like it's making life more difficult for some folks in the community rather than less difficult. And so I'm hearing good reasons to not add in the amendment.
Let's take a brief at ease. Back on the record, Representative Klayman.
All right. I appreciate the conversation off record. Between 15,000 and 5,000, I seem to have been confused. I'm going to withdraw my amendment because I want the bill that goes. Withdraw my objection. Because what I want the bill to say that goes forward to the next stage is that the population number that will be impacted will be 5,000 or less, not 15,000. And I understand the proposed amendment would take out the
prior committee substitute that raised the number 5 to 15 and move it back to 5.
Got it.
So my objection is withdrawn.
Thank you. Seeing Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to be clear, what we will be adopting is the 15,000 number, correct?
That's right.
That
okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I thought we were adopting the 5,000 number.
Madam Chair,
Representative Greenberg, let's.
I'll withdraw. Maybe Ms. Lucky can
explain. Let's let Ms. Lucky explain this.
Again, for the record, my name is Julie Lucky, staffer Representative Mike Hawker. I think there was a little confusion on the record when we talked about the amendment, so I just want to be clear. The current statute has a threshold of 15,000, a community with a population of 15,000, those municipal officers currently can choose to paper file or electronic file. It's my understanding a great many of those people do choose to electronic file, and that is allowed under current law. In the House State Affairs Committee, they adopted an amendment to drop the threshold to 5,000, and we have heard from both the Municipal League and from a few of the boroughs that they're concerned with that change. The amendment in front of you would leave the status quo in the statute, so it would not make any change to the current threshold, which is a municipality with a population of 15,000 or fewer. They would still enjoy the option of either paper filing or filing electronically.
Does that explain it to everybody's satisfaction? Thank you very much for your very clear explanation of things. So, hearing no objection, amendment number 1 passes. So, and is there any further discussion on the bill?
Madam Chair, I'm ready to move the bill whenever the committee wishes.
Let's have a motion.
I move CS for House Bill 65. Be now judiciary, but LS0070/November as amended from committee with individual fiscal notes and with individual recommendations and the zero fiscal note. There we go.
Seeing no objection, that bill passes from committee. Thank you very much. Next meeting is Friday, March 6th.